upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
On tonight's episode of Sanity Lounge, the boys welcome Anthony Turk Cannon into the studio. Anthony has had a unique journey from the shores of St. Michael's with his father to the stages of Baltimore and beyond. Don't forget to stick around after the interview for a performance in the studio. Welcome, Baltimore, to another episode of Sanity Lounge. We have a sax player in the first sax player officially in the lounge, right?
Yeah, I don't think we've had a sax player with a band. I don't even think.
Right, I believe so. So this is a unique honor, Mr. Anthony.
We've even had a horn in here yet.
I don't believe we have had a horn
nice.
Here yet.
This is a first.
The honor is ours.
Anthony Turk Cannon.
Turk Cannon. Now, I'm going to lead off with the question, the obvious one. Turk.
Okay.
Talk to me. What is the nickname?
Turk is the nickname of my late father.
Okay.
He passed away in 2014, and he was a waterman. I'm from St. Michael's, Maryland. Mm-hmm. So he was a waterman, worked on Chesapeake Bay all his life.
Wow.
And nice. I love that. And all the guys, when he came, he was young, they called him Turk. And he said, because I guess they thought I was slow as a turtle. So
that's interesting.
So they called him Turk. So when he passed, I just wanted to make sure that I kept his name alive. He was given a citation by the governor of Maryland in 2012. As the last living legend on this Chesapeake Bay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so, good history.
Yeah, man. I mean, my father had an eighth grade education.
Right.
He raised five kids, and he left this world with folks knowing and that he was somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, man.
And that's wild. Yeah, so through your musical career, you did not always go by Turk.
No, I just did that.
Wow.
When he passed, mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure.
And I bet he had some wild stories on the water.
Oh, yeah. from aliens to...
Okay. Tread lightly.
I'm like, come on, Dad. You know. He like, man, it came right out the water. I seen it.
Anthony, right. If you... Because we love good stuff right. like that. Okay. And water aliens are right up our alley. Okay. So
yeah.
If you have documentation on any of this.
Yes.
They're
down there.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah, so that's the Turk story.
That's
so,
cool.
So, yeah,
that's a good story. Yeah.
That is good. Now, let me ask you, give me your musical history. Like, was the horns the first instrument?
It was a clarinet.
No. Clarinet.
Yep. When he was nine.
Yep.
Started. What did you already research?
I'm smart.
This cat. All right.
Yeah, man, he knows.
I'm a smart man.
Started on the clarinet, and then I moved over to saxophone, and I stopped playing like around ninth grade because baseball.
Oh, okay.
You know, I grew up playing with one of the Baltimore Oriole greats, Harold Baines.
Holy shit.
Really? Yeah. You mentioned that like before you came in here that he's your cousin.
He's married to my cousin.
He's married to your cousin.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yep. And he and I grew up as best friends.
Really?
Yeah, man. In St. Michael's, Maryland, and he still lives there.
He is.
Well, so let me ask you this:
baseball legend, man.
Did you know, like back then when you were hanging, what age is this?
Yeah,
the ninth grade, so like 15.
Yeah.
Was he exceptional? We're
not gonna make this the Harold Baines
but
let me say this.
Right.
Bill Veeck, the story goes, Bill Veeck had a place in Oxford, Maryland,
mm-hmm.
who was the owner of the Chicago White Sox.
Okay.
Wow.
Seen him when he was 12.
Right.
And I'm gonna tell you now, I played Little League, I'm 2 years, 3 years behind Harold.
Mm-hmm.
Dude couldn't get him out then.
Wow.
I mean, he was just a natural. I mean, so Bill Veeck seen him when he was 12 and had some scout keep an eye on him. And in high school, I was a freshman when he was a senior. So I beat out, I got to tell this story. So I beat out all the upperclassmen. I was a starting right fielder when he was a senior.
Oh, nice.
Dude, it was at least 50 or 60 scouts at every game.
Really?
Wow.
And I think he might have only had 20 actual at-bats. They wouldn't pitch to him.
That's so funny.
They walk him every time. So he used to have batting practice after the game so the scouts
can see him hit. That's why.
Wow, that is crazy, man.
That's
Though, that's why you stopped playing was because you playing, were trying to dabble in baseball.
Yeah, baseball was my ticket out of St. Michael's.
Right.
So I 4-year starter in St. Michael's High School, and I got a full baseball scholarship to Howard University.
Nice, good for you.
Yeah, so I never had to pay a nickel for my education, and Harold, being the great person that he is, got me a workout with the actual Chicago White Sox in 1983.
Damn.
When they came in town. I'm in the dugout, Carlton Fisk, Greg Luzinski, Jimmy Leland was the bench coach, and Tony La Russa was the manager. It's like, it's amazing, man.
Yeah, that's cool.
Didn't work out.
Right.
You know, I wasn't the monster player I thought I was.
Right.
But the fact that, you know, I got a chance to see what it was like.
Yeah, that's an accomplishment in of itself. Yeah. It's interesting, just real quick, a little anecdote. Ted Danson of Cheers, he was, I didn't know this until he just said this recently, but he was on a full basketball scholarship and he was the king at basketball in his hometown. He got a basketball scholarship to UCLA or some California school, and when he got there was only one other guy that was in his position,
and who was
it was Lou Alcindor.
Kareem.
He said he went to one practice and this guy was going for the same position as him, and he realized, he was like,
I'm gonna go make a TV show
called right.
It worked out fine for both of them.
Oh, both of them, yeah, it worked out fine for
but it's not about Ted Danson or Harold Baines.
That's right.
It's about Kareem. Mr. Anthony or Lou Alcindor.
AKA Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
So you did your little jaunt with baseball. It didn't work out. Mm-hmm.
Going through college, get out of college, get married, have kids, still playing like semi-pro baseball because it was always in my blood until, I guess, about 31 years old. I was 31. My wife said at the time, you need to spend your butt. You need to stay home. You know, just running around with baseball. Mm-hmm. You need to find an activity you can do at the house. So I always loved music. And the thing is, it was always 1A and 1B. Mm-hmm. Baseball and music, it was always calling me. The music was always calling me. So I went to a store. I went to this one jazz festival and seen this guy down in Virginia, Nelson Rangel, killed it.
Yep.
And at that point in time, I had the bug. And then I went to another one and seen this other guy named Donald Harrison.
Hmm.
Killed it. And then Donald Harrison came to Blues Alley because I got a chance to meet him, and he told me he was going to be at Blues Alley. So I went down and seen him at Blues Alley, and I asked him, I said, man, am I too old to try to get back into this? He said, hey, man, you know, you've been a high-level athlete. He said, so you already know about consistent and persistence and patience
because
that's what it takes to be at that level.
Sure.
He said, so, nah, man. And the next day, I went and bought a saxophone.
Nice. And now you've sold out Blues Alley.
Yeah, and then I sold out Blues Alley. Yeah, man. So I took two semesters of music theory at Howard Community College.
And what age was this when you kind of, were like, I'm back at 30? I was
32.
32.
32.
Good for you.
And then I just, 32, man, I just grinded it out every day. I mean, I probably, in 365 days in a year, maybe I didn't pick that horn up maybe 5 days.
Right. That's kind of how he is with the drums.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man. And do it every day, man.
Yeah. It soothes, you know, it helps. Mm-hmm. I mean, other than it helps you play like great.
And all those guys that I used to go to open mics with, play with, and, you know, when I was getting back into it, I mean, they're still doing that. And I've got 18 original music playing on Pandora, Spotify, Amazon, Sirius, XM, all original stuff that I wrote, because I just figured like this, if I was going to do this, then I'm going to be an artist,
sure,
not a player.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have my own music.
Sure.
I want, You know, and the motto that I used to always keep in my head, I said, well, you know what? Nobody knew Marvin Gaye was a great singer until he made them fall in love with his music.
Sure.
So I had the same philosophy. I said, I'm just going to make them fall in love with my music.
If you have your, if you have an original thing or the original bug, it's hard to do anything else. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, and, well, you're not going to get any record deals or endorsement deals playing covers.
Right. Absolutely.
And I got an endorsement deal. Like, Sax Dakota is my endorsement company that I play. I only play their horns. Theo Wani mouthpieces. I only play Theo Wani mouthpieces, the endorsement, and Oleg Ligatures. Mm-hmm. So, and that's because of my original music.
Right.
So I go out to NAMM every year. And go out there with the purpose of trying
what
to
is NAMM?
NAMM is the big music festival in California, worldwide. You see everybody there from Marcus.
And it's all music. It's all NAMM. Instruments, right?
All manufacturers and artists.
Okay.
Yep. You see anybody, any genre of music? All manufacturers and artists. Anybody? I mean, I'm walking there, see Stevie Wonder.
Oh yeah.
Walking the floor, and nobody's bothering them. Marcus Miller, and nobody's bothering them.
Right.
Chris Botti. You see them all there because it's a code amongst musicians.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to take pictures with them and everything, but you're not going to be like, they're not walking around with security or anything like that, man. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, music industry is not that big of a world. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a small world, like, which is what you're speaking to. You know, you go to these concerts. Because I know a lot of drummers that go to the NAMM festival every year. And it's, I thought it was only a drum thing, but it's like,
that's cool. I've never heard of that festival.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you,
anybody who's anybody's there.
In
because
the industry.
Because it's the week before Grammys.
Okay.
So anybody all over the world, they come to L.A. anyway.
And they're there.
So they're already in L.A. Right. So that's why you see them at NAMM.
Huh. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Anthony, when you got back into it, like breathing technique and stuff like that, was it hard to recapture that kind of stuff, or does that kind of stuff stick with you? Keep in mind, I'm not a player. I have no idea what I'm talking about, but whatever it is, I don't know if breathing technique.
And I would
technique,
say, you weren't serious with the clarinet. You played it when you were, what, 9?
8 or 9. Yeah. No, man, it was like, and I started playing the clarinet because my mother used to watch these old movies with Benny Goodman.
Right.
So
That's funny.
That's it.
Right.
Yeah, that was the only person but I already knew early on. I said, this ain't going to groove. I got to move on from this.
Right.
Yeah.
So you didn't really have good breathing technique until you got back into it at 30. And then,
when I got back into it, I could only play it maybe for like 5 minutes at a time.
I got you.
My mouth wasn't. My armature wasn't there.
Yeah, that's something I probably take for granted. I don't even understand what it would take to play any kind of horn instrument.
I can play all day long, all night long.
Really?
But 5 minutes, man, and then you can't hold it. I mean, after 5 minutes, I'm like, take a break.
Right.
So you just build it up. Oh, it takes. My teacher told me when I first started playing, he said, 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Takes 5 years just to be decent.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now and that's everyday practice.
That's
right?
Everyday practice.
Right.
Wow. Now, if you got some gifts and you really work hard, you can cut it down where you start. The tone is the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting your sound. And that's an experiment. I mean, one thing about saxophone players, we spend a lot of money thinking that mouthpieces and certain reeds are going to all of a sudden give us that golden sound.
But they don't.
It's not.
Right.
It's just time and long tones and just, you have to find your right setup.
Right.
You know, at this point in time, I can sound good on a student horn. It doesn't matter now because my setup is correct. I mean, when I say my setup, I got the right mouthpiece. I got the right reed combination. I got the right ligatures.
And, I mean, breath and breathing.
And strong and everything like that.
It's all perfect.
Yeah.
So, and locked in.
Yeah. Ligatures. What is ligatures?
That's what holds the reed on the mouthpiece.
Okay.
That makes a big difference. Yeah, different reeds, different ligatures open up the horn. It all depends on the style of music you're playing.
And that's all subjective. It's all personal preference.
That's right, man. It's all about how you construct it.
It's kind of like John and his drumsticks.
I was going to say, it's the drumstick thing. It's like there's all kinds of different ones, and there's no rhyme or reason to it, but, you know, each person finds their niche.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Same with horns.
Right.
Certain horns, like Yamaha horns, they just don't feel good to me.
Right.
Their setup is different. I can't play them. So,
what makes I mean, what makes a mouthpiece or a reed better than another? I mean, in a basic sense, I guess.
Personal preference and, yeah, and what you're chasing, the type of sound you're chasing.
But is it materially different different ones?
Okay, like, yep. I play Redbox, Van Doren, Kane reeds on my alto and soprano. Mm-hmm. On my tenor, I play Legere plastic reeds.
Okay.
So I play a plastic reed on my tenor,
right?
But I play the wooden cane reeds on my alto and soprano,
and it
because
it has a completely different sound.
Because it's the sound that's me.
Right. I got
it's you. It's my voice.
And the, also, can you feel it being the player? Can you feel a difference between a plastic reed and a, like, does it?
Oh yeah, but the feeling is good.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but like the feeling in a good
is,
way.
Yeah, but the feeling is good.
Right.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I'm so ignorant to horns. I've played with horn sections, mm-hmm, you know, but mm-hmm, I'm ignorant to the horn. I love it.
Yeah. My son plays the flute and he's 14, but he's been playing 5 years now and he's starting to get it, so he's starting to enjoy it.
That's a whole different note, man. A lot of saxophone players won't touch the flute.
Yeah,
I tried it and the whole armature is different.
Right.
I mean, because you hyperventilate.
Yeah.
If you don't have the right, you pass out.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah, because you lose a lot.
I was saying it's like fast breathing, I guess.
Well, you lose a lot in the transfer.
Right, okay.
So, because your armature, you know, the flute, you're right here, and you got a stream of air has got to go in that little hole.
Right.
I got you.
Prolonged stream.
Right,
where
right.
Saxophone, we got the aid of a reed that vibrates and everything, you're using your tongue, and you got more time to get to that note on the saxophone than you do on the flute. On the flute, it's unforgiving.
Wow.
If you not straight into that hole, then you just sound like crap.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. You know that for your son.
Yeah, you can hear, you hear that just high pitch.
Yeah.
See, with the saxophone, you can have 15 different mouthpieces until you find the right one that makes you at least decent.
Right.
You ain't got that with the flute.
Right.
It's either you get it or you nail it or you don't.
Yeah.
Right.
It's right. And it was frustrating for him when he was getting into practice, but once he got it.
But once you get it, flute players are beautiful.
Yeah.
But then when you find a flute player that can play.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice. Gorgeous.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what were your musical influences?
Grover Washington and David Sanborn.
Wow.
They got
David Sanborn.
Yeah.
Love them.
Yeah.
Grover Washington.
Grover Washington and David Sanborn got me going. And then some of the older cast like Dexter Gordon. Everybody said my sound on tenor is more like a Dexter Gordon type of sound. But the true nature of a saxophone player is to, you find someone to mimic early who you want to sound like. You want to sound like, you know, Grover Washington, you want to sound like David Sanborn, you want to sound like Dexter Gordon. And then during that whole progress, during that whole journey, you find your own voice.
Right.
Because all saxophone players, I can't speak for all, but I'm pretty sure all saxophone players don't want to be known for their name. Mm-hmm. They want you to say, walk into a room and say, oh, damn, that definitely sounds like Anthony Turkanen.
Right.
You want people to say your sound is the first thing that identifies you versus your image.
Okay.
It's that's like interesting.
Everybody knows that David Sanborn, oh, that's David. I know now, oh, that's Grover.
Right.
Or that's Andy Snitzer.
Right.
Or that's, you know, Michael Brecker. I just know who it is because of listening to them and their style and their voice.
Right,
tone. You already know who it is, Walter Beasley. Just know who it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what saxophone players strive for, is for you to recognize them for their tone, their voice.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
their
that
own unique sound.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's just like the Santana thing. You always know when you hear Carlos Santana, you're mm-hmm. like, that's Santana,
very
period.
Yep.
But in the horn
Jerry
world,
Garcia,
you know, the same thing rings true in mm-hmm. the horn world,
yep.
apparently.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
a long
stuff.
Journey, man. Yeah, some people get it early. Sometimes you just chase that sound forever. I was fortunate that my alto sound was the last thing to come, but I was always had a good tenor sound. And then the soprano was, well, the alto came, and then now you're chasing the soprano. The soprano's the hardest one to keep in tune.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I'm sure a lot of people know the difference between any of those saxophones. like an alto, a tenor, a soprano sax. I mean, they're just pitches and sounds.
To add to that question, as you're answering that question, is, you know, what specifically, you know, talk to us about the different alto, tenor, and also, does every sax cat have the whole run of like alto, tenor?
No, some people just play tenor. A lot of cats just play alto.
What's the most common?
It all depends on the genre of the music. Okay. So with smooth jazz, you're gonna find more guys heavy on tenor than alto and soprano.
And to be clear, is that the straight one or which?
No, that's the bigger one.
The big one.
Yeah,
okay.
With the curved neck, the tenor. They find that more. It's interesting. With me, I can't just play one horn because when I write music or I play music, other people's stuff, cover stuff. If you know, I'm not gonna play a David Sanborn song, say Chicago song. You know, when he wrote it for alto and he played it on alto and then play it on tenor or soprano, it's just not going to have the same feel.
Sure.
You can do it, but you know, if you're chasing something different because everybody plays it on alto. So the difference is alto is in E flat and the baritone is in E flat. The tenor and the soprano are in B flat. So a lot of cats that aren't really into reading or they just want to play the tenor, it's only one step up from piano.
Huh.
So just the theory of it. So if you're playing the piano in C,
right,
and you're playing the tenor, you have to play in the key of D, which is one step up.
Okay.
With alto, it's a sixth above or a third below. So that's the math of it. That's why you see a lot of kids in school, they teach them more on alto because they want them to understand the theory of the horn. Because tenor and soprano is easy to go to.
Right.
The key is your scales. You got to know your scales. And one of the things when I, you know, teach young kids, because I have some students back in the day, I used to teach some students, and I used to always work on them and say, you know what, scale, scale, scale. You know, my girlfriend has a son who's 14 years old, and I got him playing like 2 years ago. And one of the things I pushed on him before I even let him try to play any songs was learn your scales. I'm not letting you play any songs until you can play your scales. Because once you know your scales, you'll never get lost in any song.
Right.
I could step on any stage, not even know the song.
Right.
Find the guys used to say, oh, we're playing in this key. I'm like, no, dude, don't even. It doesn't matter because I got transposed anyway. Mm-hmm. Just play. And then I just, okay, boom, just like that. Within 30 seconds, I know what key they're playing in.
Right. This is the equivalent to the rudiments in drums. It's like if you just practice the rudiments in drums, you will be
solid.
And
the scale is just a pattern.
Mm-hmm. The scale is, no, that's the foundation of music, not a pattern.
Okay.
The scales, you know, there's, you know, A, you got C, D, E, G, A flat, B major, D flat major.
So when you say you're practicing the scales, you're saying just running, are you reading music, running the scales?
Yeah, running the scales. And boom, 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 boom. So this way, because you have to, one of the things, a lot of guys that play by ear, and I don't want to get too philosophical into it, but a lot of guys that play by ear, they just play randomly. They don't even know what they're playing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They said, I found a few notes that work in the key of the song that they're playing in. And you find this a lot with, and I'm not a slider, I'm not talking bad about blues players. But, you know, all they know is 1-4-5.
Right, right.
They don't know any, you know, Dorian scales, Lydian, Mixolydian. They don't know not Phrygian. They don't know anything about that.
Right.
And those are the different modes of the scale.
Right.
So if you're going to be a real musician, know that. Because the musicians that make the money are the ones that can read.
Right.
If you don't read, you can't get big money gigs.
Right.
Because a lot of professional players, they're not going to have 10 practices. For you to learn the song, they're gonna send you the sheet music. That's what I do with the players that I call.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
I send them sheet music. If they can't read music, I can't use you.
Right.
Right. Now we've talked to some. That makes sense.
Yeah. That's the difference between.
And not everyone can.
Right. It's a different level. It's a professional musician versus
And you don't have to be an expert reader, but you have to be able to read charts.
Right. Right. Right.
Chords.
Right. Yeah. I find that blues usually is a passion project. Most of the blues players that I've known, you know, over time, it's like either they do know the scales, but their passion is blues. Mm-hmm. And so for whatever reason, that one...
And there's nothing wrong with ear players. Yeah, there's a lot of great ear players.
Yeah. Sure, sure. But I'm saying, like, to your point, it is kind of the same song.
But you can't get session work. Go back to Steely Dan.
Right.
Those guys.
I love Steely Dan. It's my favorite band.
Walter Becker and Donald Fagen. Yeah, and I looked at the documentary, and one of the things that they said they loved a lot of the players that used to come in to them for some when they was rehearsing auditioning players and everything. He said they had the soul, they had this and that, but they couldn't read.
Yeah.
He said, we could not use them. We had to make sure that we sourced the best players that could read and had that it.
Yeah. Like Bernard Pretty Purdy. I saw the same documentary. Look,
the rest is history, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, I love Steely Dan. Like, yeah, man. That's my shit. That kind of music is my shit.
Yeah.
Speaking of music, your songs, first of all, they're wonderful.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
The music that the tracks themselves, is that you or is it?
Okay, here's.
What is that beep?
That's me.
Okay,
I can't give away. I can't give away all my trade secrets.
Sure.
But what I do, the way that I put my music together, and I try to make sure each song doesn't sound like the last song.
Sure.
I want to have some diversity and, you know, just a good feel for each song that I write and put together. So I work on the song on the piano, get the ideas together, and then I got this guy in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
I send my ideas on piano with the bass and blah, blah, blah. I send it to him. We've been working together for about 8 years now.
Wow, that's interesting.
I send it to him, and he plays all the instruments, or he'll get whatever he needs, and he'll send me back my original songs. He's like, Tony, what do you think about? Here's what you sent me. Here's what it is now. And I'm like, beautiful.
And then you just write the horn parts.
And I write the horn parts.
No, that's cool.
I go in last. When I record, I'm the last guy in. I'll switch out local guys. Like my new song that I'm working on now called Digging That Groove.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using a local drummer. I don't want to drop these guys' names because I don't have the right to put their name out there. But I'm using a local drummer who is a first call smooth jazz drummer, plays with everybody in smooth jazz.
Right.
I'm using a guy who used to be Patti LaBelle's bass player on bass.
Nice.
So I will get the track back, and if I don't like what I hear, then I'll call in the big guns to come into the studio, like here, and they'll come in and lay down their track. They'll replace the bass that's already there. They'll replace the drums that's already there. They'll replace the guitar that's already there.
Right, right.
And then the song still feels, but a lot of times it can feel better because I'm telling them now exactly what I want, or I'm letting them feel the song and they get it. So all that is just a process, my process that I say it's my secret sauce of how I put my music together.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let me ask you, so when you're doing the original idea, it's you on the piano in the early days, do you have an idea of a horn part already? Or are you just like doing something on the piano, you're like, I think I like this, you send it off, and you worry about the horn part later?
No, I already know. Because I already had the melody in my
head.
Right.
So
yeah,
it's like two parts. I got the melody in my, the whole song melody in my head. Mm-hmm. And then I got the sax melody somewhat. But you know what? And when I go in the studio, it's at least 4 to 6 sessions.
Right.
Before I have the song exactly what I want. The first time I go into the studio, it's just to give me an idea of what I think I want.
Right.
And I give my friends, I'll send it to my friends and I say, I want you to hear what this song sounds like today, and I'm gonna send it to you again when it's done. And a lot of times, 10 out of 10 times, it's not the same song anymore.
Right, right.
Because right. my sax melody has developed. I've heard different things. And
evolved.
That's right. That's right.
So what about when you're playing out live, like a live gig? How do you handle that? Like you have a slew of musicians that you reach out to?
I have my first call guys that I call, and hopefully they're in town.
Right.
You know,
right.
And then I have the other guys, the second call, but they're all good musicians. And
generally, how many of it is it?
I usually do a 4 or 5 piece band.
Okay.
You know, sax, keys, bass, guitar, and drums.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, are you? You said you came from York. Are you from PA? Or
no,
are
I'm
you
from
St. Hey, Michael's.
St. Michael's.
Come on, pay attention.
St. Michael's.
Mm-hmm.
The waterman. Yeah. His dad
that's
was
right,
a waterman.
That's right. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this: did you ever develop? Like, were you ever a waterman, like proper? Or,
hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me and my brother out on that
water. Yeah, I kind of have.
But
to.
I mean, that's, like, that's I'm wondering, like, nowadays, like, do you mess with it or?
I fish.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, I do a lot of fishing, but no, man, my
because I figured you either lean into it or you're like, eh.
No, my father didn't want it. My grandfather, I grew up in St. Michael's. My grandfather lived right next door to us, and right next door to my grandfather was my uncle.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a whole lot of family right on the next street or right on the same street, and they were all watermen. So
nice.
Yeah, yeah. So my father didn't want us on the water. He busted his butt to make sure that we all went to college, and out of the 5 kids, 3 of us got college degrees.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good for you, man.
Yeah, man.
So the 4 songs that you played, the one, okay, hold on here. Good Morning Aruba, uh-huh. The horn you used in that.
Soprano,
okay. Yeah. That was the last song.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That's my favorite. Uh-huh. I loved them all because uh-huh. I'm a Steely Dan guy. Uh-huh. And like, they're yeah. all, you know, like, it's that style, you know. That,
yeah.
That's, I love that.
That song charted number 12 last year on Discovery Jazz. Smooth jazz chart.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, like yeah. I said, I really dug all of them. Yeah. And then, but.
What I think would happen here today, that song was the easiest one to transfer over to playing with the track.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the songs I'm using multiple horns on.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
so. But I'm saying, to be clear, I loved them all.
Mm-hmm.
I just,
mm-hmm.
well, that last one.
What do you mean,
one,
yeah. you what know. Do you mean you're using multiple horns?
So on The Good News,
mm-hmm.
Looking Back in Time, and City Nights, I'm stacking horns. So I'm playing the lead melody, and then over the top, I got backing horns.
Oh, right. You're saying in like a studio version of the song.
Or you're here that I'm playing, like I'll play like ba-da-dee-da-dee-da-da on alto, and then I'll come back and play that same line with soprano,
mm-hmm.
ba-da-dee-da-dee-da-da, because it makes that note, that whole line fatter and sure. more dynamic.
Right, right.
So the songs could feel a little naked here today because
it's a live performance. Yeah, right.
It's a live performance, and I wouldn't. I mean, I'd have to hear. It was nasty. Like it was great.
Yeah, it sounded great.
It was fantastic.
It sounded great. Yeah. So, all right. Let me think. And I wrote down all these questions. Yeah, I want to make sure I get to all of them.
And I try to do a video with each song because I try to tell a story, which each of my songs and everything like that. And the one song, which is I think is a unique story, and it's personal to me, and it's a message that I share with all the men when I do my shows, and it's called The Good News.
Right.
And that's a story that I was diagnosed with prostate cancer.
Oh, wow.
In 2020.
Okay.
And never, you know, taking care of myself and the whole thing, but, you know, didn't really know. Both my parents passed away from cancer, so I know about cancer. I had a lot of cancer in my family, as we all probably, you know, today know someone.
Definitely.
So I go to John Hopkins to see one of the world-renowned urologists, Dr. Arthur L. Burnett. Mm-hmm. And I can use his name because I want folks to be able to look him up if they're in trouble.
Yeah.
And I go into his office with my other doctor friend, Dr. David Francois, who NIH, military, you know, thank you for your service, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And I walk in, he looks at my case, looks at my chart, and he says to me, here's the good news. The truck has not left the garage. I can offer you a cure. And I was like, best news I've ever heard in my life.
Sure, that's
great. Because when you hear cancer, you don't hear the word cure.
Sure, yep. Right.
So he said, I can offer you a cure. He said, here's the good news. And I was so overwhelmed with the way he took care of me that I wanted to do something more other than say thank you. Right. So I wrote this song called The Good News, and I shared it with John Hopkins, and John Hopkins picked the song up and plays the song at all their facilities all over the world.
Nice, awesome, man.
But I did it for Dr. Burnett, and because he saved my life.
Right.
And so at all my shows that he can make it to, he comes, and I give him the mic. He comes up on stage, and he talks to the people about my case and how, men, don't assume you're okay. Go get that PSA yep. test.
Yeah, man, that's right. Yep.
Go get that PSA test. So, I mean, so I'm sorry, guys. I'm not trying to commandeer
you. I don't mess around with any of that stuff. He just had his first exam.
Yeah, I just did a colonoscopy. We talked about it on here. I was horrified, yeah. But it was really not a big deal.
No, I mean, and it's important. I'm going to be 50 in September. He's going to be 49.
Right. And yeah, I'll it's tell time to you, really get, the gentleman get who helps us produce the show, Hollis, yeah. The guy with the cowboy hat, yeah. At the live shows.
That was at Guilford, yeah.
Yeah, he had a cancer mm-hmm. serious problem, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he's good now.
Yeah, you my know, father but, went through it, yeah. Yeah. When my kids were young.
That
yeah.
PSA test yeah. is yeah. very important. Yeah. That number.
100%.
You know, yeah. It's so, good so, stuff. So that's the story behind it.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's so you're a real message, deep, you're yeah. a deep dude. I dig yeah, it. Yeah, you know, like yeah. you got a lot of thought behind a lot of your stuff. I like that.
Yeah, honestly. I like it.
Yeah, thank you.
Do any of your songs have vocals?
Or is yeah, it, do, yeah, 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 yeah. Just did one with this.
Do you do the vocals?
I sang background on the song called Dial My Number.
Okay.
But the guy who actually sang it, we call him Tito,
mm-hmm.
Windsor Pettiford, school mm-hmm. teacher, but he's got a great voice.
That's a and great name.
Yeah. Windsor Pettiford. Yeah.
Yeah, he does a lot that of, me and him name. Do a lot of duo stuff together. Cool. So, and then I use this incredible female vocalist. She likes to go by the name Satora,
mm-hmm.
Satoria. And that song is called Till Next Time.
Okay.
And then I use the guy on the song, a guy named Mark Staggers, on my song called Lights Down Low. And an incredible keyboard player produced that song and mixed it for me, Dawood Saeed. He passed away like 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. But talk about a music savant. Yeah, man.
Hmm.
And yeah, so I certain melodies that I come up with, I hear lyrics. I write all the lyrics to all my okay. music, and I hear the lyrics, and so that's how a song becomes a vocal song for me. Is that if I hear words that are coming to me, I write them down, and it's all about telling stories.
So, right, right.
So the song "Lights Down Low" was inspired by the story that I heard about John Coltrane on his world-renowned CD, Love Supreme, and it was all about how his wife understood his passion and understood his commitment to jazz and the pressure that he was under from wow. his record company to create this masterpiece. So the story goes that she told him to go upstairs, lock yourself in a room, I'll bring you whatever you need.
Turn the lights down low.
Yeah, they said 30 days later, he emerged out of that room with the album Love Supreme.
That's a good incredible. Woman right there.
Yeah.
That's when you know.
And he said he told the world, you know, if it wasn't for her, this could not happen. So huh. the song that I wrote is just all about, you know, him shouting out to the world, you know, I could not have done this without her.
Right, right.
And, you know, so, you know, the story is if you got a good partner, we'll just say partner today, right? You got a good partner that understands your passion, your love. There's nothing that's going to keep you from it, man.
Right, right. Yeah, that's thick. That's heavy shit.
Yeah. I like it.
I do too. So, okay. So the songs, let me think here. I want to make sure I get through all my questions that I wrote here.
Mm-hmm.
The good news. Okay, so the titles in general, it seems like you've got, you know, are they all thick stories behind them, or?
Brandon's song, Looking Back in Time.
Right.
That's a song where I wrote about my son. I lost him in 2022 through a head injury. So I didn't want to write a song that was sad. I wanted to write a song that was uplifting and a celebrated celebration of his life.
Sure.
And he was a wonderful, wonderful young man. And lost.
What age are we talking, if you don't mind?
He was 34.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, man. And beautiful, beautiful young man.
Are you a spiritual man, Anthony?
Yeah.
Good
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, yeah, man.
You gotta be. I mean, that's a tough one, you know.
So,
and it's beautiful. I mean, the song, it's one of the, you know.
And if you hear it from the studio recording, I mean, it's just so powerful. Mm-hmm. I sent the songs to you anyway, mm-hmm. so you could hear the songs. And at the end, you know, on the vocals, I say, "I miss you, Brandon."
Yeah. You know, I heard that, but mm-hmm. I didn't mm-hmm. know. But that's
I said, "We miss you," meaning all of the whole family, everybody that knew him. Right. We miss you, Brandon. So.
Yeah, that's heavy, man. And that takes, you know, again, I can tell you're a heavy dude because it takes, you know, a certain modicum of candor to be able to dig that deep and do something that emotional.
Initially, it was a sad song that I had written.
Right.
I didn't want that.
Yeah, right.
You know, I wanted people to feel good about his life, and it's if you look at the CD cover, it's a picture of me and him, but he dominates CD cover,
sure,
not me,
right?
Because I wanted his face, his image to be out there forever,
right? Right.
So, and it is because the song is all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, that's wonderful. Yeah, man, that's good stuff. You know, and then what was
like
the
theme song?
Yeah,
it is
with Ron, their bass player. His bass player passed away. I mean, what, 6 months ago? Maybe.
Yeah, it hadn't been a year.
And he's the bass player on the theme song of this show.
Okay.
Yeah. So right on, it'll always be the theme song of the show.
I know. Right on. It's crazy. So what? And looking back in time.
That was Brandon. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And then what the heck?
City Nights.
Good Morning Aruba. City Nights. I wrote Feels Breezy and Majestic.
Yep. If you see the video.
I loved that one. Yeah, that was the first one.
Yeah, that's the first one. Yeah. And I did the video downtown Baltimore.
Nice.
And recorded it, the video and everything. And that was just a song. When I was writing the song, when I got the melody, I was in downtown Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And I travel around with my day job. I do federal contracting for the federal government.
Okay.
And I see all these different cities and everything. And I'm like, what do you need to leave the United States for? I mean, we got the best architecture. We got the best cities on the face of the earth. Okay, Dubai, but that's all fake.
Fantasy land.
Yeah, fantasy land. Right. It's not real. And so, and I call it a City Nights because it's just, you know, if you just sit back and listen to it, it's just the beautiful nature of just take 5 minutes and just look at the different landscapes of our cities across this country.
Yeah, man. I said it feels breezy and majestic.
So
it
you
feels
travel
like
all
a
over the
night.
Country for your job.
Yeah, I do.
And
a lot
you
of
always have your.
Oh, I never. I always got my.
So you always find a place to play when you're at these places.
Yep.
That's cool.
That's it, man. I'll go sit in quick. I'm not gonna sit in a hotel.
Sure.
I was at a conference 2 years ago in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And they're having these after dinner things and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, well, we'll see you around 7:00. I'm like, you lost your mind. I'm going to play. I'm in New Orleans.
Right.
I was out playing, sitting in, going to all the clubs, playing in New Orleans, man, while I was down there.
Sure.
So what do you do? I mean, you just walk in?
Yeah. Remember what I told you?
Right.
I know my scales.
Yeah.
Right. And so, also, walked into Guilford. Remember? Right. He was just walked right into Guilford Hall and was like, hey, what's up?
Yeah. Yeah. And I came to you, but I said, you think they'll let me do a song?
Yeah. I said, they is me.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Well, I guess it's getting to the point where people are knowing you now, too.
Not really.
No?
No, because see, with my endorsement deals, you know, I can't just go out and play. I don't do clubs.
Okay.
You know, because, I mean, just people paying a cover to come in and see the band.
Yeah. Right.
Because the folks that I have endorsement deals with said, well, if somebody can come out and see you play for free, why would they buy a ticket?
Sure, right.
So
I get that.
Strategically, I'll go out and I'll do a blues jam or something like that, or I'll know somebody and they'll say, oh yeah, man, I'm playing, you know, so come out, bring your horn. I'll come out and, you know, play maybe one song.
Sure.
And one song turns into two.
Yeah.
Sure.
But I have to be careful because I always tell them, please don't record this.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of folks want to be recording and putting stuff out there and everything like that. So, but I enjoy doing it. And it's because It's the love of friendship. If someone calls me, and that's my weakness, and I tell my girlfriend all the time, I said, you need to stop me from saying yes all the time.
Right.
Because folks will call me, and I would just say, you know, all right, fine. Because it's a privilege, not a right, for people to want you to spend time with them and ask you to come out and play.
Sure.
And everything. And I don't do it for the money. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm okay on money. I don't do it for the money. But I like to support folks.
That's the best reason. People best local thing, man. Music like, and just stuff the fact like you that. Do it Friends. For the love of the music. Yeah, man. Yeah. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely.
Somebody's coming up, they're just starting out, and they say, man, I'd love to have you on. May not be at the level I'm at, but you know what? I'm still going to go get on stage with them because I can uplift their show.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, by being there, helping them feel better about their journey.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what? Folks did that to me.
Yeah, right. Everybody starts somewhere, man.
They let me come up on stage when I wasn't that good.
Right.
And
right.
supported me. And I'm telling you, and I have to give a shout out to those guys, like this guy named Ed Scott, John Kersey. This guy named Kevin, what was Kevin's last name? From Baltimore. But it was a host of people that let me come and play with them when I couldn't play.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's the best. Yeah. And the only way, ironically, it's kind of like getting a Screen Actors Guild card. The only way to get better is to just jump in and play. Yeah. But not everybody will let you just jump in and play, but you just keep doing it and doing it.
Do you remember the first time you got up on a stage?
Y'all want to hear this story?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously, y'all want to hear this story?
No, I love that story. Like, if you remember the first time, because it's got to be an intense situation.
Okay, so here's what happened. So I'm taking lessons from this teacher down in the Washington, D.C. area. And he tells me, I said, man, I think I'm ready to go out and play blues. He said, no, you ain't ready. I said, I'm practicing, right? I'm at home practicing, blah, 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 practicing. And I go out like for a month, take my horn to these different blues places. No, it's the same blues place up in White Marsh. Remember when White Marsh had that, they had a place up there. I forgot what it was called. But
in White Marsh.
Yeah, it's back in the 90s.
We're from Westminster, this side of town. Okay, so in the 90s, we wouldn't have been over there.
Yeah, so
it was. I was thinking Getter.
Yeah, like 98, 99, somewhere down in there. So I go up there like 4 weeks in a row. Don't pick my horn up. Don't take my horn out. They say, you going to play tonight? I'm like, So I.
You were drumming up suspense.
I went that last time and I get up on stage and they are playing. This is blues, man. 1-4-5. I get up on stage. I could not find one note. Three songs now.
Right.
He give me solo. It's horrible. So after that song, I'm like trying to get off. No. We got two more songs. Remember the Flintstone movie where Fred started shrinking up?
Yeah.
Because he was so embarrassed.
Right.
Okay. Second song.
Yeah. Right.
And the place was packed.
Right.
Right. That's the way it goes, baby.
Third song. Oh, I couldn't pack that horn up fast enough.
And were they giving you shit or were they cool about it?
No, the people were cool. But you know,
right.
They're like, really?
Right. So are you saying it was as bad as you think it was?
Oh.
Look, so trust me.
When they said on guitar, drums.
Right, right.
Bass on saxophone.
I'm like, yeah.
Right. They start announcing the band. You're like, don't do this now. Like, just wait.
So I learned. So that was a lesson to answer your question. That was a lesson to know your scales.
Mm-hmm.
My teacher had been telling me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Learn your scales. Because when you know your scales, you never get lost.
Right.
Right. It's a confidence. Yep. You know, it's like knowing jujitsu and walking into a room.
So why'd you ask me that? Why'd you put me on?
That's a great question.
I had to tell you the truth.
I mean, it reminds, like what Tristan said, like the reason he gets the seat is because he shows up on time and always knows the music.
Right. and he can find the one. Yeah. Baby. You know, that's the most important thing.
And his instrument's always in tune.
That's true. Yeah. So, and what, like tuning horns like that, do they get out of whack like guitars? Like, is it weather type stuff?
And saxophone's an acoustic instrument. Mm-hmm. So inherently, it's always out of tune.
Right.
So you never are able, let me just say this. I'm not going to say you're never able. It's probably only the top players can probably tune their, but they've had so much work done on their saxophones where they are in tune on every note.
Mm-hmm.
A lot, majority, half the notes you gotta lip in. Because pressing them, because if you move your mouth, you tune up by moving your mouthpiece in and out, or your ligature up or down. Okay, so
So
if I'm in tune on A, B, and C sharp, I could be out of tune on B, B flat, and G. So what are you gonna do? You can't in the middle of the song.
And so what do you're saying you compensate by using your tongue and your mouth and all kinds of weird.
So you find that spot where you got the most notes that are played in tune that are naturally there from where you are, and the rest of them you have to just lip in when you get them.
Yeah, that's wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is an art form in itself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like locking in what your choice of notes will be,
bottom line is you're not just blowing into the instrument.
No, there's a lot going on, baby.
That's why it's so important to get to that sweet tone point in your playing career.
Right.
Because once you sound great, being slightly sharp or flat doesn't show up.
Right, and your confidence level is probably on a different level because your sound is confident.
Yeah, that's right.
Or whatever you want to describe it. That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah.
So the long straight one, what's the?
That's the straight alto.
So, and that you mentioned to us earlier is one of a kind.
One of a kind.
Tell us a little bit about
the owner of
Sax
Dakota, Dakota Sax, Pete LaPlaca. I've been with him. He was my first endorsement deal.
Okay.
He gave me my first shot and everything. God, that had to be, 15 years ago now.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah.
And I went to Pete and I said, Pete, I want to play a straight alto, but I like, as you see my horns, they, except for the soprano, both altos, they have a lot of silver in them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Silver brightens up your sound.
And etchings.
And etchings.
A lot of saxes don't have etching.
And the etching in it, and then like that. So, but a lot of them have really beautiful etching too.
Yeah.
So I asked him, I said, can you find me a straight silver alto? He said, I got the regular bronze and the gray. I said, I want a silver because, the kazazz. Right. I'm telling you, everywhere I play, when I bring that horn out, it just fascinates them. They're like, what is that? And it's beautiful and everything like that. So part of being a sax player, man, you got to have that swag.
Yeah, man.
It's
the ultimate swag.
Oh, yeah, one-of-a-kind instrument. Yeah, it's definitely that swag.
You got to have that swag, man, when you play sax. Because when you come on stage, people expect you to be able to give it to them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when you can't, like I did at that blues place that you made me talk about.
Well, you can back it up with your second time. The second time was better.
So, that's what that was. That's a straight alto, and it's the only one they ever made, and I have it.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
The intonation is beautiful. It sounds beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's just such a beautiful horn to play and easy to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Are you good to go or what?
Man.
All right, so when we're wrapping up, Mr. Anthony, we like to ask each guest what their favorite top 3 to 5 movies are, if you could narrow it down. First of all, are you a movie person, a TV person?
I watch certain movies.
Okay.
You could say, we've had people in here that haven't seen movies before.
Literally.
So
if you're not a movie person, you can say you're not, but if you have a top 3 to 5, 3 is fine. A favorite movies that affect you emotionally. The Deep Anthony.
Yeah, the Deep.
You said, the Deep.
And we like it. And that's, we always put everybody on the spot.
Yes,
Oh, man. I guess, let me see. Give me a second
here. Sure, man.
I can't believe y'all doing this without preoptomy.
No, so we never do.
Well, that's why.
It could, I mean, it could even be just a movie. The movie you've seen the most.
Don't overthink it.
I'm trying to think of the name of it.
I'm a movie guy.
Yeah, so you are a movie guy. He can figure it out.
I can probably.
Okay. Okay. Which Way Is Up?
Wow. All right.
All the way back. Richard Pryor.
Oh, no, I'm which sorry.
Way?
Yeah,
what were you thinking?
Wow.
Which Way
I
Is Up?
I was thinking of
he was the first one to play all those different characters.
Man, I haven't
wow,
seen
which
that.
Which Way Is Up? That's old.
That's old, yeah, man.
I loved all the Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor movies.
Yeah. So that's
I
like,
haven't
that,
seen that. Brewster's Millions, that's one of
yeah,
my favorites.
Yeah, that one's still a good one.
Yeah. Which Way Is Up?
Which Way Is Up, man.
Wonderful. I got to figure out that.
What other one? Oh, I love the Denzel movie, the first of the three series movies that he did, Equalizer.
Oh my gosh,
Equalizer
was the best one.
Yeah, definitely.
The first Equalizer was real good.
Going South is what I thought.
Going South, yeah. Okay.
But you say it emotionally, so you got to throw in Boys in the Hood.
Okay. Oh my gosh, yeah. Love the first. I mean, Boys in the Hood was the first movie. I mean, it was the first movie I had seen like that affected me on an emotional level.
Yeah.
Menace to Society came out, I think, the same year, but it was different.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Boys in the Hood is the movie you kind of watch, especially you don't say anything after you see it.
Yeah,
because what it did for me, it made me realize that my mom and dad were married for 61 years. Mm-hmm. It made me realize how important having, it doesn't matter if you're black or white.
Sure,
having that dad in your life.
Right.
To take you out back. When you need to go out back.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because I had to do that with my boys. I got two sons. Mm-hmm. And the oldest one, the one that passed, never challenged me. But the oldest one did. And you don't want to kill that spirit. Because that's what boys do.
Sure.
That's what we did with my father. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just who we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we trying to take the throne before it's our, until before he gives it to us. So the Boys in the Hood movie was good for me with that whole cast of characters. Mm-hmm. Because it showed the father being tough and direct, but also letting the son know that, look, man, I love you, man. I can't allow you to not be here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's just not a black thing. That's just a dad thing.
Sure.
Right. And yeah. Lawrence Fishburne in that role was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a perfect stern presence. And as you say, like even in the haircut scene, like when he's cutting, what was his name, Trey?
Yeah.
Is it Trey?
Uh-huh. Cuba?
Yeah.
Trey.
Cutting Trey's hair and they're talking about women. Yeah. It's like he was loose with them.
They were boys, but
he was very stern with them too. And that's the difference maker between Doughboy and, you know.
And the last one, Space Odyssey
2000. Oh. Anthony, you're deep, Anthony.
Yeah, I'm a sci-fi.
Good for you.
It's just been so long.
Yeah, it's been so long.
I love heavy
sci-fi. Yeah. 2001 A Space. I mean, that came out in 68.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, but it looks phenomenal.
But it made you think.
Oh,
yeah.
It made you think.
About our existence.
Absolutely.
Yes. You know, what is the actual reality of our state of being?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
I mean, the heaviness from Dawn of Man to the, you know,
all
like
the way through.
Jupiter, I was reading
who
something.
Are we and where do we come from?
Right. I was reading something recently about 2001. I mean, there's never really aliens shown in the movie.
No, there's a space
but it's kind
baby
of implied
at the end.
That they're watching. He's an experiment as he's growing old, living in that room.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and at the very, very end, there is a huge entity in the solar
system. Yeah, I remember
the
fetus.
Yeah.
Right, it's born again.
Which is what, like the dawn of man?
Well, it's just rebirth or some sort of, you know.
It's starting over.
It's answering that question that we all have asked each ourselves. You know, where did we come from? Where did I come from?
Sure. Right. Yeah.
Where was I before I was here?
Right.
Or was I? Yeah, man.
It's a wonderful question.
Yeah, it's very heavy, man.
It's the great mystery.
That's why I love 2001. If you dug 2001, and maybe you've seen it, and maybe you haven't, but like it scratches the same itch for me that 2001 did.
Interstellar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you ever see Interstellar?
I did, with Matthew McConaughey. Yeah. Yeah, I did. I didn't follow it as well as I did 2001.
You ought to revisit it. Yeah. Especially
but you know, Arrival was along the same way.
Oh, man. Yeah. Arrival's
not Danny the same
that
one.
That was just on the other night.
Dude, yeah. Arrival with Amy. You're talking about with Amy Adams and Jeremy
Renner. No, Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster one. Yeah.
You're thinking of
Contact.
Contact is Jodie Foster. The Arrival is
Amy Adams.
Where the aliens are writing the language.
Yeah, that's right. That's the Arrival.
Contact is with Jodie Foster.
Contact was Jodie Foster.
That's a movie I haven't revisited in a while.
Carl Sagan wrote Contact, and Zemeckis directed it. But I love that movie. I think that movie had a bum rap a little bit.
Along the lines of 2001 and Contact is The Abyss.
Let me ask you. The Abyss.
When your father saw The Abyss, was he like, holy shit, this is what I'm saying about he didn't see it,
I gotta add that one to mine, that's one you watch every night.
God, it is a good one.
What were you gonna say?
Did y'all ever see that movie Mission to Mars?
Oh yeah, no, Val Kilmer.
No. It was with the guy. What is his name?
Tim Robbins. All right.
Yeah, there was
two Mars movies in the same year. One was Mission to Mars, and one was the other one. So Tim Robbins.
Because that one talked about how we were reseeded on Earth.
Right, from folks
on Mars.
Now, did he lift that concept? Because there was two Mars movies that year, and I only saw one of them. I know one of them was De Palma, and one of them was another famous director. And I don't think I saw the Tim Robbins one.
Yeah, you got to watch it.
I think I saw the other one.
I mean, the Tim Robbins one is Gary Sinise, Tim Robbins, Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle is real good. I didn't see that one. I saw the other one.
Yeah, that's real good. It's a real good one.
Brian De Palma directed that one.
So De Palma directed
Tim Robbins.
Okay, so I didn't see that.
That one will make you think.
Interesting. All right.
I've never seen that. I've never been there.
It's older. Figure out what
the other Mars movie in 2000 was. Because Red Planet. That's it.
Okay.
That's Val Kilmer.
That's Val Kilmer.
Yeah. Red Planet. That's it. So it was Red Planet, Mission to Mars. I saw Red Planet. And I remember I was a little underwhelmed. Like, I don't remember it blowing my head off.
I mean, if you follow Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 14%.
Which means bad.
Yeah.
I don't follow Rotten Tomatoes. I just watch movies, and if I like them, I'm like, hey.
Carrie Ann Moss, Tom Sizemore. It's got a good cast.
Yeah. Like, it was.
Terrence Stamp. Zod.
We all love Zod. But it just wasn't deep.
Yeah, I remember that movie.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. Yeah, they were great picks. Movies. Yeah, good picks, Mr. Andy.
Yeah, well,
good stuff.
I like, always like the sci-fi stuff and
You have to. It's offensive that Mr. Predator here hasn't watched 2001.
I've seen it many times, I just haven't seen it in 20 years.
And the first Predator was the best one.
Yeah, the first Predator.
I agree, but I'm a fan of the whole franchise, except 2018's Predator, the Predator. I liked Prey.
Right.
There's a new one that just came out that's animated, like anime style, called Killer of Killers. Directed by Dan Trachtenberg, who did Prey, and Predator Badlands comes out in, September or October?
It's soon.
And that's like a youngling Predator on their home world. Like, that's going to be good.
But wait, every one of those is live action except for this one.
This
on
one
Hulu.
That's out right now on Hulu is animated.
Right. And I heard it's violent.
It's four different stories, but it's the same director of the most recent movie, Prey. This and he's doing Badlands too, which I think he's doing great stuff with the franchise.
That's good.
But I do agree the original Predator,
because look at the guys that were in it, and then they all wind up being stars.
Sonny Landham.
Yeah, he had the bodyguard, but it was to protect them from him, yeah. not him from other people.
Carl Weathers,
man.
Rest his soul. Yeah, man. Yeah. Great cast. Bill Duke.
Yep, Bill Duke.
Jesse the Body Ventura.
Yeah, Richard Chavez. Yeah, I have a line to him. Like, I'd love to get Poncho in here for a Predator episode. Yeah, man. Yeah, he follows me on Instagram.
Get out of here.
He's Poncho. Yeah, he kind of got recently back into the, like, scene where he's kind of going around the cons and stuff like that. My partner that I do the alien props and all this stuff with, is he lives in England, and he's a master sculptor. Like, he's a world renowned sculptor, and these guys follow him, and now they're starting to follow me and my work, which is cool. But Richard Chavez, Poncho, is one of the guys that follow me.
Deep dive interview Chavez here.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Via Zoom. I can get him in here.
Or we'll get him in the lounge.
That's good, man.
And Ian White. Like, he played the Wolf Predator and Scar Predator.
The second Predator was good. Yeah, there was a difference with Danny Glover.
I wish
the third one was a continuation, because they left
right,
it.
Yeah.
Like, it could have been.
What was the third one? Was that Adrian Brody? Was that Predators?
So,
or what was the third?
Predator 1 and 2, then Aliens vs. Predator. That's different. Technically, it's not necessarily the same universe, but it is.
I got to tell you, I like the first one of that alien.
I like.
Remember,
all of
Lance Hendrickson was in it. Like,
yeah.
It was legit.
Waylon Utani, like, he's the company that's what ties Alien to the Predator.
Prometheus.
Yeah, and then AVP was cool, because that's the Wolf. He's like the cleaner, and he's based on like Winston Wolf from Pulp Fiction. He comes and cleans up the mess.
Love it.
That the aliens
made. I've never seen that one. Which one is that?
Aliens vs. Predator Requiem. But the problem is you got to turn the brightness up on your TV, because it's shot really dark, and that's the number one complaint. And then there's Predators with Adrian Brody, which is that's back to this original universe.
And I like that one. That
it's great. Yeah, they get dropped on their homeworld in a hunting preserve, and the Predators hunt them.
Right,
2018 had potential, but it was just...
The
casting was poor.
Okay.
The idea was good, but then Prey, that took place like during the Indians. It's a feral predator.
1700s or some shit.
And that's where they kind of tied in the pistol from the end that the older predator throws Danny Glover.
They
create an origin story for that pistol that isn't quite canon based on the comic books. It was given to him by a pirate.
Yeah, but who's counting? Nobody's gonna keep track.
On the internet.
I forgot. That's right. He did.
Yeah.
Before he walked into that next dimension, he did.
Yep.
He threw him the gun back. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Anthony, do you have anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
No. I mean, just my new song that I got coming out.
Yep. Where can they find it?
Yeah, Digging That Soul, Digging That Groove. It's not out yet. Mm-hmm. It should be done in the next couple months, but.
All right.
You can hear your music.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Everywhere.
Spotify. You can hear my music. If you tell Alexa, play songs by Anthony Cannon.
Okay.
She'll play about 18 to 20 of my original songs, man. Fantastic. Everything's
wonderful,
out there.
Man.
Do it.
Well, we really appreciate you,
We'll have all the links on our posts.
Pandora. Yeah. I'm on all the streaming sites. Website is www.anthonycannon.com.
Yep.
Buy my music.
Too. Yes. Yes.
Nice.
Can I
support
say that?
Local, yeah, support local artists. Buy the music and see them live.
Yep.
We'll throw up. We have our event calendar. What's happening, Baltimore?
Okay.
If you send me some of your gigs, we'll put them up there so people know where they can come see you.
Okay.
I know you have some shows in Rehoboth coming out, or was your calendar updated?
I'm playing in Ocean City. I got a residency in Ocean City at the Carousel Hotel.
Oh,
I play there every Sunday, 2 to 5.
So you
drive down Ocean City every weekend, just during the season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So every Sunday from 2 to 5.
As long as it's sunny. I didn't play last week because it rained, and it looks like it's going to be raining.
We're going to be there at the end of this month, like the 26th, 20th. We'll be there that Sunday.
Okay, yep.
We're staying up that way.
2 to 5.
We're staying near the Green Turtle, and his band, Making Waves, is playing at Fager's the Saturday before that.
Okay.
They play Saturday, and we have a bunch of friends going down.
Yep.
That's wild, man. Yeah, that's fun.
Yep, I'll be there.
But if you pop into if you're there Saturday night, pop over to Fager's.
Okay,
yeah, what time? We're the deck party, 5:30 to 9:30. Yeah. So it's like
it's a blast.
It's awesome.
Oh, yeah, it's a blast.
It's the Fager's? Sun sets Fager's. Fager's,
yep. Fager's 63rd Street. Yep. We will all be there. I can guarantee it.
Yeah, man. It'll be a great time. It's free.
Yeah.
I was going to say, give me a comp ticket, man. Stop playing.
No, it's free.
It's the deck party, and it's always a killer time. Yeah, always a killer crowd. Yeah, it'll be good stuff.
Yeah,
this was a pleasure, sir. I appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
And it was fantastic.
Stay sane, Baltimore.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, Baltimore. You can find us at www.sanitylounge.com or on Instagram at sanity.lounge.
Keep listening and subscribe.
Stay sane, Baltimore.